This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, June 2nd. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Very glad to have you tuned in, and a continued welcome back to those rejoining us here in the Bay for the summer. Coming up this week, a trip over to Peter Pan to find out about a major change this season.
We are not going to be canning at the Dillingham plant here, and we're just going to be freezing, have a frozen product form.
Plus, skipper Frank Woods tells us how his two-year-old tendering business is going, including how hiring so many of his kids is working out.
Horrible. You know, my kids are mechanically inclined. They have really good work ethics, and I rarely have to tell them twice what to do.
We'll check in with some of the folks giving honeybees the old college try this summer.
The ultimate goal is to then take these bees, insulate the hive, and try to winter them over.
Plus, some Narcan has now been distributed around town, and the author of the song We Ask Your Blessings, which is sung every year during the Fisherman's Memorial and Blessing of the Fleet, joins to discuss. That's all coming up after a look back at some of this week's news. A young man from Dillingham died last Friday night while on a fishing trip upriver. 19-year-old Jasper Kapotik suffered seizures outside of Kaliganik on the Nooshigak River after he and two other boys had canoed up a ways for the night. State troopers say the two boys paddled Kapotik back to the village where health aides attempted CPR for close to an hour until a medevac flight took him to the Kanakanak Hospital, where he was pronounced deceased. State troopers said an autopsy would be performed. There was a shakeup at the Bristol Bay Native Corporation Board last Friday when longtime director Danny Siebert stepped down and Deidre Hill was appointed to fill his seat. A press release says Siebert resigned for personal reasons, and neither BBNC nor Siebert has responded to requests for further comment. Siebert, who is the CEO of Penair, has been under fire for his airline's poor service to Bristol Bay since switching to the Saab 2000 aircraft. 16 local boats fishing halibut on the 4E quota have now landed over 27,000 pounds this season. That's closing in on the halfway mark, and BBEDC's Gary Klein reports he expects a handful or more boats to join in on the fishing, the remaining 32,000 pounds of quota. This week, President Donald Trump announced the U.S. would pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement, drawing the ire of many. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski's reaction was measured, but she said she was skeptical the president would be successful in his efforts to renegotiate a better deal.
That, to me, seems incredibly difficult. You have, 160 different nations that have already signed, that are moving forward with the commitments that they have made. I don't know how we come in as the holdout, as I understand it, it's Syria, Nicaragua, and the United States now that are not in this, how we renegotiate it. I don't think we have that kind of leverage, quite honestly.
Murkowski chairs the Senate's Energy and Natural Resources Committee. This week, she accompanied Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke around the state and to the North Slope, with Zinke pledging to help increase oil production in Alaska. The season's first major wildfire response is underway today near Tok. The Alaska Division of Forestry reports that aircraft, smoke jumpers, and ground crews are battling the North Robertson Fire about 30 miles northwest of Tok. Forestry officials say the blaze grew from 2 acres on Thursday morning to 550 acres by last night. There are still no clues to the whereabouts of 25-year-old Gust Gretchen IV of Pilot Point. Gretchen has been missing for more than a month. This week, Alaska State Troopers returned to the village for more searching on the ground and to run down any and all leads or rumors. Sergeant Luis Nieves is the AST supervisor in Bristol Bay and offered an update afterwards.
We transported two canines with their handlers out to Pilot Point to search all known areas and potential track lines that Mr. Gretchen could have utilized. With negative results after several hours of searching.
Sergeant Nieves says troopers have run into a dead end on every lead and rumor they have been provided so far. They do not believe Gretchen left the village by plane, and inside his house they found his bags packed and his cell phone had been left with someone else. The state's legislature has reached a stalemate in its negotiations to put a budget and long-term fiscal plan together. That's according to a press release from Governor Bill Walker today. This week, notices of a potential government shutdown went out to all state employees. If the House and Senate do not submit a budget for the governor's approval ahead of July 1, all state services could be halted. The governor said he intends to intervene in the negotiations more directly starting today. And a Washington man employed as a seafood processor in Naknek was arrested early Tuesday morning on charges he knifed two men during a fight outside the fisherman's bar. Borough police say 31-year-old Dasha Quinn Smith was heavily intoxicated and fessed up to the assault. Two victims required medical treatment, one locally and one medevac to Anchorage. Smith was charged with two counts of first-degree assault. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. You're listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. I'm Dave Benninger. We'll start this week's show with a conversation with this guy.
Yeah, it's Tom Moynihan in there, and I am the fleet manager for Peter Pan in Bristol Bay.
You've been Peter Pan the whole time?
Or how you know what? I started working for Peter Pan, I think, in 1987.
I've been at this plant since?
2008.
Tom invited us over to talk about a major change happening at the longest continuously operating fish processing plant in Alaska, maybe in North America. We step into the cannery's warehouse, that long, dark, cool facility so many visitors to Dillingham have walked through during their Peter Pan tour, and we stop to notice a banner hanging high on the wall.
There's a poster there, 1901, A Century of Salmon, Peter Pan Seafoods, Dillingham, Alaska, 1901 to 2001.
And this is going to be a big turning point this year. Can you explain what that will be?
Yeah, you know, right now we've made a change in for the upcoming Bristol Bay season, where we are not going to be canning at the Dillingham plant here, and we're just going to be freezing, have a frozen product form, and that's kind of our plan for this year.
Peter Pan is not alone in Bristol Bay in making that change this season. Ocean Beauty and Red Salmon are also not planning to can their catch. They're following a trend in the world's largest sockeye salmon fishery to send more product out fresh or frozen. According to a Northern Economic Study commissioned by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, last year canned production in the bay dropped by 17 million pounds. That had nothing to do with the size of the harvest, which was the second largest in 20 years. Head and gutted fresh production increased eightfold to 13.6 million pounds, and fillet production jumped 50% to just over 49 million pounds. According to the study, H&G frozen production stayed about the same.
Tom, you've been in this business for 40 years?
Yeah, I've been in, working on 40 years.
A cannery is part of the vocabulary, the vernacular. People sell their fish to the cannery. That's changing now, though. What does it tell you about what's going on in Bristol Bay?
Well, it's, as mentioned, it's gravitating more to a frozen product right now. And between H&G, fillets, the fresh market, and, you know, the domestic market is, you know, plays a big part in that, too, where I think for, you know, wild sockeye, the domestic market has definitely is a much more of a stronghold there, and that's a good thing.
To deliver fresh and frozen sockeye, you need better fish from your fishermen to come in. Will you get that this year from your fleet?
Yeah, we've been really gravitating more and more to chilled slush ice and RSW, and it's by far a big majority of our deliveries anymore. And it's pretty amazing where it was, you know, 20 years ago or even 5 years ago, the quality of the fish coming into the facility, okay?
The Northern Economic Study found that 71% of drift deliveries were chilled in 2016. That's the highest number ever. And again, it happened during a big harvest year. It's also up from the 24% of drift deliveries that were chilled in 2008. RSW systems now chill 82% of the drift fleet's chilled deliveries. And some 60% of survey respondents say they see a day coming soon when processors don't can any Bristol Bay salmon.
Are you proud of the improvements that this bay is making?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, I think, just from an industry, from the fleet to the processing sector, it's come a long ways.
Peter Pan's Dillingham plant has made significant investments into its H&G production capability, and that is going to be their main product this season, which Moynihan says can always change by next year. The fillet lines and even the cannery might come back online if the market calls for it. But he says the cannery market is challenging, with small profit margins and a fading consumer base.
Really, the canned sockeye market, is such a majority of it has gone across the water to the UK there. And I think just with, you know, fish costs, the price of tin, you know, the European, the UK currency, the exchange rates, it's just a tough product form to have any margin in. And that's where we've gravitated over to just all frozen here at the Dillingham plant this year.
Do you miss any aspect of running a cannery? I mean, it's a pretty neat operation to see happen anyway.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of nostalgia there, and to go down into the cannery and hear the sound of the machinery and the cans, it'll be missed there. There'll be a little melancholy, I guess, but, yeah, definitely there.
What about workforce? Does this change anything for Peter Pan in terms of its impact here locally and the rest?
You know, not locally, but, you know, we will definitely have a decline in process workers. And I think to run a cannery, it takes just so many more people are involved with it. And but the workforce will be, it'll be cut down somewhat, not a real large percent there, okay?
Two new H&G buildings will run almost all of Peter Pan's Dillingham-based salmon processing this year. It's a business-based decision that Winahan says the company will reassess as they go. There are also other Peter Pan facilities that can cooperate and coordinate to process the massive harvest of salmon from this corner of Alaska.
You know, we do produce a large volume of fillets at our Port Muller and our King Cove facility, but at Dillingham we won't this year. And we'll definitely produce some fillets for the Fish for Kids program, you know, and that'll be coming up here sometime around that first week of July or shortly thereafter.
Tom, thanks so much.
You betcha, Dave.
This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, back in a moment. Continuing our program this week, honeybees are not native to Alaska, but four beekeepers are making an experiment of keeping hives here in Dillingham. That's something that's been done before, but not very frequently. As KDLG's Avery Lill reports, they are hoping to expand their operations beyond the summer, wintering their bees over, and that would be something new.
There's the glass. These are cow skin, so they can't sting through them.
Pamela Murphy dons a classic white bee suit, making sure all the zippers are zipped, the Velcro is fastened, and the elastic cuffs are pulled down well over her extra tufts. Then she slides on her calfskin gloves. She's had her bees for about 2 weeks, and she hasn't been stung yet. Murphy's bee box sits in a sunny clearing. Several bees meander toward a small opening in the wooden crate that's about the size of a microwave. The pollen baskets on their hind legs are swollen and bright yellow. Murphy opens the lid to reveal the 9 trays that fill the box. She lifts one up. It's teeming with bees that are beginning to build a honeycomb.
The bees are mostly working on creating the wax comb to have all this space to store honey. And then ultimately, come late August, early September, we'll take the frames out of the honey supers and try to extract what honey we have. And then the ultimate goal is to then take these bees, insulate the hive, and try to winter them over.
That's an unusual goal for beekeepers in Alaska. Honeybees need temperatures above 50 degrees to fly. They need to fly to defecate, and if they don't, they'll become septic and die. So most Alaska beekeepers kill their bees when the temperatures plunge and start over with a new colony in the spring. But Murphy has a strategy, and Bristol Bay's temperatures are mild enough relative to the rest of Alaska that it just might work.
Bees do go into a kind of a hibernation state. We'll put everything into one brood box, so we won't extract all their honey. We want them to keep what they need to survive the winter. We'll insulate, I guess the brood box will insulate it, so we'll hopefully do maybe some controlled climate, maybe put something over them to warm it up so they can get out at least one time in the winter to go to the bathroom.
This beekeeping project began with a February class at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Bristol Bay campus. Don Kogan, a master beekeeper from Fairbanks, taught a weekend crash course in Dillingham. Afterward, four people, counting Murphy, decided to make a go of it and order their own bees. Turns out, even getting bees to rural Alaska can be a chore. Some bees got loose in the cargo hold when the first vendor tried to ship Murphy's bees, and the airline refused to carry that vendor's goods. The second vendor was more successful at keeping the critters contained. Her roughly 20,000 Carniolan bees arrived from California a couple weeks ago. Murphy is in this for more than the honey. Her hive is so new, she'll probably only get a jar or two this year. It's really about the science.
Part of the hive that I have is working with the Brisbane campus and working with Don Kogan to basically do the research and find out, can we winter bees over? What does it take to winter bees over? And between myself and the other three beekeepers, we will gain enough information to be able to, you know, do it again and again and again, and then give that information to Don Kogan, who can then put it into her work and basically have a set of standards in beekeeping in Dillingham, Alaska.
Between the bees and the equipment, Murphy has about $600 invested in her hive. If the bees don't survive the winter, it will be a little over $200 to order more next year. But if the experiment is a success, this will be the first time bees have been successfully wintered over in Dillingham. As she replaces the top of her bee box, Murphy uses a brush to gently sweep the bees away from the edges, trying not to squish any.
Bear with me 1 second, just make sure my top is on good.
With that gentle care, Murphy and the small community of Dillingham beekeepers she calls a bee club hope to make a hospitable home in a harsh climate for Dillingham's new buzzy residents. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
You're listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Many of our listeners probably by now know what Narcan is. The antidote to heroin overdoses has proven its ability to save lives. Recently, some Narcan kits were distributed around Dillingham, and citizens and law enforcement officers trained in how to use it. Dillingham Public Health Nurse Gina Carpenter stopped in this morning to offer an update on this very important effort.
Yeah, so it's the Project HOPE with the state of Alaska, who received federal funding to try and help reduce overdose deaths. Obviously, we know addiction's a problem in a lot of places in the state, and unfortunately, Dillingham's not immune to that. So the Public Health Center has Narcan kits. They're an intranasal kit that can be used if someone's overdosing. If you find somebody down and you don't even know if they have heroin or prescription drugs in their system, you can still give them this Narcan.
Life-saving.
It's life-saving, and it doesn't hurt somebody if that's not what's going on with them. So just use it if you don't know.
They are a little bit expensive, and they're hard to get a hold of, which is why this effort is underway. How did you and even our Dillingham Police Department make an effort to connect people?
Well, thanks for asking that. You know, the chief of police allowed me to ride along with him last week, and he took me to places that he had concerns for folks that might be at risk for overdose. And so we went out distributing the Narcan kits to people in possible need, and we gave almost 20 kits out last week.
Can you describe your interaction with folks, if you don't mind? I talked to chief about it, and he felt it was very well received, to the point where he said there were two adult men who had basically gone to tears over this.
I think people realize that it's a scary issue. When you're being offered something that might save your life, that you're recognizing it is it's a big problem and a big deal for you, or you have children that might be at risk for overdose because, you know, they're struggling with their addictions. I mean, it's really scary in this town, and people were so grateful and appreciative, and hopefully it might encourage some people to consider treatment because obviously the alternative is very risky.
And there was no guilt or shame attached to this interaction?
You know, absolutely not. Addictions come in so many forms, right? My addictions are coffee and chewing gum, and not maybe those aren't life-threatening or would promote criminal activity like some other addictions do, but I think that we have to realize we're all human, we all have the potential, and that it can attack any one of us, that we're not immune and we're not above anybody else who's struggling. So we need to just be open to acknowledging that, not to allow it or tolerate it necessarily, but that we need to embrace that it's a problem and that we're here to support community members until they can get themselves back on a straight road.
I heard from the state troopers and from the local police that they've now been trained to use Narcan in emergency situations. They may not have any with them necessarily. That's still coming, I think. But so that's a good step in the right direction because they may be the first to interact. But let me ask you this is, what's the next step and who should people contact?
Okay, so if you ever are concerned about somebody maybe being in an overdose situation, the first thing to do is call 911. Even if you have a Narcan kit and you administer it intranasally to this person, they're still at risk for slipping back into unconsciousness over a period of time. So kits are available now at the Dillingham Public Health Center. You just kind of need to call ahead to make sure that I'm there, and it's a quick 10-minute training. I'm not going to put you through much paperwork, and you'll be in and out of the door pretty quickly.
The fight goes on.
It does. And I really appreciate you giving me this time, Dave. Thanks.
Good to have you on here. Gina Carpenter is a public health nurse at the Dillingham Public Health Center. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
If you happen down to the PAF yard among the hundreds of 32-foot drift boats, your eye might be drawn to the 60-foot aluminum tender Kaluka Queen. She's been buying fish and hauling loads around Bristol Bay for two seasons, going on three. It's a locally owned tendering operation run by a local longtime fisherman. As KDLG's Caitlin Tan reports, Frank Woods has a tender side.
Frank Woods and two other partners purchased their tender boat in 2015. He spent 55 days fixing it up and has since named it the Kaluk-Kuk Queen in memory of his grandmother. This is what's special about Woods' operation. It's family-oriented. Last year, all 10 of his kids spent the season with him, and this year, three of his sons will accompany him. So, how'd that go?
Horrible. I love working with I'm really fortunate. My kids are mechanically inclined. They have really good work ethics, and I rarely have to tell him twice what to do.
Although Woods has commercial fished his whole life, he's transitioned to mostly tendering. He says it's a more reliable income as it doesn't depend on the price of fish or fish return, but rather just a contract.
You know, I could at least operate my business plan off that without having any worry too much, unless something drastic or an act of God happens.
Woods contracts with Copper River Seafoods and primarily buys drift catch in Naknek and then set gill netters from Togiak Bay. The Kaluk-Kuk Queen is not the biggest tender in the bay, but she can hold 120,000 pounds of salmon.
Which is a little above average for the size boat because it's all tank, basically. So
a 35-ton refrigerated seawater system can chill 100,000 pounds of fish before he delivers to the shore-based processor. The Kaluk-Kuk Queen has proven fast and efficient as she makes deliveries often several times a day during the peak.
We have a really unique situation where we are living in the biggest sockeye fishery in the world.
Tendering is steady work, but it's not always glamorous. The crew may go 48 hours straight without a break. And like fishing, there is a lot of busy work.
There's a lot to do. It's not just jumping aboard and collecting a check. A lot of background paperwork and work that needs to be done on a regular basis. Upkeep of the vessel, there's always something to work on.
Aside from fish, his tender business provides other amenities to fishermen, selling them fuel, groceries, and smokes. At this point in his career, Wood says he knows just about everyone fishing in Bristol Bay.
If you're working with people you know, makes it a lot more enjoyable. And then servicing that, whatever service, be it hauling, tendering fish, makes it even better.
One thing Woods prides himself on is providing local jobs and keeping money in the community. Last year, he employed 7 workers with a captain, deck crew, engineer, co-captain, and cook.
A little over $100,000 put back in the community of Dillingham, and that equates to about 7 times it rotates within it. Yeah, it really, number one, it feels good not only to employ family, but also people in town, and creates its own economy. It's kind of rewarding.
Woods' son and co-captain, Daryl Woods, says working for his dad has become a staple during the summertime. This will be his second season. He just arrived to work on the boat 2 weeks ago as he was finishing the spring walrus and sea lion hunt in Little Diomede, where he lives.
I came here without even talking to my dad. I told him I was going to head this way a month ago and didn't even talk to him beforehand. I just knew that there'd be a lot to do really quickly.
Daryl Woods says the tendering business is a bit more relaxed. He compares actual fishing to grunt work. Frank Woods' philosophy for the tendering business is similar to the tale of the tortoise and the hare. Slow and steady wins the race.
Now we try to pace ourselves, you know, slow is smooth, smooth is fast.
His contract with Copper River Seafood starts June 15th and wraps up by the first week of August. Then he will put the Keokuk Queen to work hauling cargo around the bay till the end of October, and maybe doing a little hunting from it as well. Then it's back to work for Woods, as he says fishing and tendering is his vacation from his full-time job at the Bristol Bay Native Association. For KDLG, I'm Caitlin Tan.
And as a note, we'll be dispatching Caitlin Tan to Naknek next week. Look for her crawling around the east side, finding fishing stories to report this summer. Finally, on Sunday, many will gather for the annual blessing of the Fleet and Fishermen's Memorial. The bell will toll for each of those lost over the years, and prayers offered up for the safety of those going out to sea this season. There's a song that has been sung now for decades, and its author is Priscilla Scrady. We last spoke to her around Beaver Roundup because she wrote one of those songs, too. I called her back in La Crosse, Wisconsin this morning to see if she'd mind sharing a bit about the story behind We Ask Your Blessings, which will be performed in a moment by our friend Teresa Duncan.
No, not at all, Dave. Some of the ladies, of which I was one, at Holy Rosary Parish, had the idea that it would be nice to have a blessing of the fleet prior to the fishery. And so we contacted the other churches. Sister Marie-Anne Brent was our administrator at the time. We didn't have a priest, a resident priest. So Sister Marie was very active in the community, and so she started contacting all the other churches and inviting them to participate and said, you know, that we would like to do it as a community. And so it got off the ground, and I don't remember precisely the year that we had the first one, but Sister Marie found a song that she really liked, which is, I think, sometimes still used. Lord, you've come to the seashore, and, you know, talking about the fishery and God looks at the fishermen. And then a couple of years later, I thought, you know, it would be nice to have our own song that would be just specific to Bristol Bay. And I sat down one day. I happened to be homesick from work, and I just sat at the dining room table, and the song came to me, verse by verse. And that's really how it happened. It was just an inspiration. And then at the time, Shelley Wickstrom was in town at the Lutheran Church, and Shelley and I often sang together just at our singing sessions. And so I called Shelley, invited her to come over, and I said, Shelley, what do you think? Do you think this is something that would work for the blessing? Oh, she said, yeah, I think it would be great. So a couple of us got together and just practiced it a bit, and then when the blessing happened a couple of weeks later, we sang it, and that happened to be 1994, which was our last year in Dillingham. So I suppose it was my thank you, if you like, to Bristol Bay and the wonderful times that we had.
We are gathering together by the shores of Bristol Bay. We come to ask your blessings on our fishers and our fleet as we stand in quiet harmony and bow our heads to pray. We bring our open hearts and lay them humbly at your feet. We ask your blessings on the fishers going to sea. We ask your blessings on each one's family. We ask your blessings in the wind and in the rain. We ask you, Father, bring them safely home again.
A lot of the joy for me, and probably the tone of the song for me overall, was that we were all Christians, and it was not just one particular group. It was the group at large, ultimately the unity of the group was the joy, and probably the key part of the lyrics for me.
Our traditions were your destiny. Some choices have been made. Our faiths have many labels and some differences, is true. Standing here together in the sunshine or in shade, scanning o'er the faces, we are still the same to you. We ask your blessings on the fishers going to sea. We ask your blessings on each one's family. We ask your blessings in the wind and in the rain. We ask you, Father, bring them safely home again.
Yeah, so the weather is mostly the wind and the rain, but still, you know, Dillingham is a unique place. It really is. And so many people have been lost out there at sea. And, you know, it's just special that when you see all the boats lining up in the harbor to leave, there's a special hope that everybody does come back safely.
We remember all the people whose lives were lost at sea. We praise you for the oceans you have filled for us to share. We thank you for the blessings you have given lovingly. We ask you to watch over us and hold us in your care. We ask your blessings on the fishers going to sea. We ask your blessings on each one's family. We ask your blessings in the wind and in the rain. We ask you, Father, bring them safely home again.
My biggest thought would be a thank you to Teresa and the other people that carry on the song. And one of these years, I look forward to being back and standing there in the group to sing it for the blessing. That would be special.
And thank you, Priscilla Scrady, for joining us again on Bristol Bay and Beyond. That's it for this week's show. You can find this and past episodes at our website, kdlg.org. Keep in touch by email, feedback and story ideas to dave@kdlg.org. The KDLG News team has grown for the summer as we work hard to keep up with you working hard. Avery Lill, Nick Shalino, Allison Mullenkamp, Caitlin Tan, and me, Dave Benninger, can all be reached here at the station. Have a great weekend, and we hope to see you back here next Friday.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.